By the time I got to state prison, I was 18 years old.
This week, we've been following the Associated Press series on juveniles sentenced to life without parole. A 2016 Supreme Court decision allows many of those cases to be revisited, like the case of Earl Rice Jr. He was released after 43 years in prison for a crime he committed at the age of 17. When he and a friend spotted 62-year-old Ola Danenberg on a Pennsylvania street after leaving a party.
Without saying a word, we decided to grab her purse and took off running down to my friend's house. It wasn't until 2 days later, on September 4th, that I found out that the police were looking for me and that it had something to do with a murder.
AP national writer Adam Geller profiled Earl Rice Jr. as part of the series on juvenile lifers. He joins me along with Earl Rice Jr., who recounts what it was like to be sentenced to life as a juvenile.
To say it was hard is an understatement. An 18-year-old going into a maximum state penitentiary, you're usually looked at as fresh meat. And fortunately for me, I knew how to take care of myself pretty well. And I had a friend of mine that I grew up with, so I had a chance for him to counsel me on how to behave, what was going on in there, how to carry myself, basically how to survive.
Now, Earl, you wound up doing 43 years of that life sentence largely because of a Supreme Court ruling. And Adam Geller, I want to turn to you about the Supreme Court's decision. You've been following a lot of cases like Earl's of juveniles sentenced to life without parole who either got resentenced or have had their sentences shortened by the Supreme Court ruling. What are these decisions often like, and how are inmates like Earl confronting their resentencing?
Well, the thing that's really striking about all of these cases is just how painful they can be for pretty much everyone involved, whether it's the family of the victim or the offender. And so these cases are coming back up now because the Supreme Court has ruled that juveniles need to be looked at differently than adults and punished differently.
Adam Geller, you mentioned the victims' families, and in states across the country where these rehearings are taking place, they often have a say. In Earl's case, the victim's family didn't want him to get out. What happened?
After Earl was resentenced and made eligible for parole, the family of the victim was contacted, and they did go before the parole board and spoke at length and in detail about Ola Danenberg, the woman whose death he was responsible for, and told the parole board that they didn't think he should be released. It's three grandchildren of the victim who are still alive, and one of them, the granddaughter, is actually very split about this, conflicted. She still remembers her grandmother very well, and at the same time, she hopes that Earl does well on the outside and wishes him the best.
So this was a two-step process, Adam, after the Supreme Court's ruling. The court ruled that juveniles convicted to life without parole had to be reconsidered, but that didn't mean that Earl necessarily got out. It just meant he was eligible for parole, and then he had to go in front of the parole board to get that heard.
That's right. What the Supreme Court ruled is that juvenile offenders, even those convicted of the most serious crimes, deserve consideration, deserve to know that there is a chance, a reasonable chance for eventual release. It is still possible to sentence juvenile offenders to life without parole, but you cannot do so on a mandatory basis without first considering who they are, the circumstances of their youth, the crime itself, and to also consider their potential for rehabilitation and change. And once you do that, the idea is that they can be sentenced more fairly.
Earl, when you went in as a 17-year-old kid, were you resigned that you would never get out?
No. I knew somewhere along the line that I would be getting out. I didn't know how. I didn't know when. I just knew, and I convinced myself that I wasn't going to die in prison, that somewhere along the line I would be coming home.
So can you take us back to the moment when you heard about the Supreme Court's ruling or the first time you understood that it could lead to a reconsideration of your sentence?
Yeah, I heard about it. June 25th, 2012, Florida versus Graham deemed that juveniles should be treated separately than adults as far as mandatory life sentences in prison. But I knew that wasn't the end of it there. And it was then that I knew that I was coming home.
So, Adam, what helped in Earl's favor in terms of getting him paroled?
It's hard to know specifically because no outsiders can be present at parole board hearings. But there are a number of things that were submitted on his behalf that are sort of testament to who Earl grew to become in prison. Letters of recommendation from guards who knew him and who recalled that he was one of the inmates that broke up a riot that was starting to brew, a fight that he stepped into and protected guards. Letters about and certificates of his work in the prison hospice and taking classes in refrigeration and air conditioning and all sorts of things that showed that he was not the same person who he was at 17 and that he had made a conscientious effort to improve himself and to be a better person.
So, Earl, you did this crime when you were a 17-year-old kid. You got life without parole. The Supreme Court rules and your sentence got reevaluated. Now you're out after 43 years. Do you think that you served the right amount of time for what you did?
No, I think I served too much time for what I did. I didn't intentionally go out to kill Mrs. Dannenberg. I'm responsible for her death, and I accept that, and I accept anything that come with it. But during the 43 years I was on the inside, I've sat down there and rubbed shoulders with organized crime figures, hitmen, guys who intentionally kill and will go out and kill again and have no problem telling you they will do that when they get out that didn't receive life sentences. So I think I was treated much more harshly than a lot of people who were given lesser sentences than mine for much more heinous crimes than mine.
And now that you're out, Earl Rice Jr., and you look back on your childhood, on who you were at 17, what does it seem like now?
At 17, you're not thinking straight. You're living on impulse control. That's what I call it. And whatever kind of self-gratification or any kind of gratification you find at that age, you have a tendency to stay with that. And that's pretty much the kind of life I was living back then. But when I look back, I see how many advantages I've had, but I didn't see that at the time. Hope some people listen to this and get something out of it, especially some young people get something out of it, and they don't have to go through a lot of the things I went through at that young age.
Earl Rice Jr., paroled after 43 years in prison. Earl Rice Jr., thank you for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
Also, Adam Geller, national writer for the Associated Press. Adam, thanks.
Thanks very much for inviting us.